Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Stevie Nicol here in the studio. A little later on, Stuart Robson will be here to reflect on yet another goalless draw for Manchester United. We start, though, in the Copa del Rey. Barcelona taking on Sevilla in the second leg of the semi-final. Remember, Sevilla won the first leg 2-0. Barcelona with a good start, though. Dembele scoring after 12 minutes. Stevie, I know you're frustrated by the Sevilla defence in this one.
Well, because they never closed the ball down, that's why.
So, good start for Barcelona. However, Sevilla with the chance to make it 1-1. And, of course, away goals do count in this competition. Ocampos brought down. He would then dust himself down and take the penalty, which was then saved by Ter Stegen. And what a key moment that would be, because then in the 92nd minute, Fernando with the foul just on the edge of the box. He is sent off for a second yellow. Free kick, nothing comes of it, goes out for a corner. From the corner, though, eventually Griezmann plays it into Piqué, heads it into the back of the net at 2-2. And from that moment, there was only really going to be one winner as he went to extra time. Braithwaite scoring what proved to be the winning goal. We saw Barcelona advance then to the final of the Copa del Rey. We're just confirming how things stand. They're awaiting now the result of Levante against Athletic Bilbao, who are in action on Thursday. Well, let's welcome to the show, shall we? Frank Leboeuf and Julien Laurent with us. Jules, you've been wrong about Koeman all the time. He's a genius.
He's in the final of the Copa del Rey. It's a good start, I guess. Genius, I think that's pushing it. And I think today they benefited probably more even from the mistakes that Sevilla made, both tactically from Lopetegui and then during the game, the red card for Fernando, that clearance from Diego Carlos on the second goal. Why does he need to put the ball back in play like this towards Griezmann? I don't understand. And obviously the Ocampos penalty. But they also played with a lot of energy and a lot of intensity. Certainly in the first half, we saw Messi was possessed, Dembele with another really good goal. And overall, this is good for them, for their confidence. We saw similar scenes, if you remember, in the quarterfinals against Granada. Yeah. Not that after that it was much better, but certainly in terms of confidence and momentum going forward, it's a really good game and a really good win.
Frank, how much did Barcelona win this and how much did Sevilla lose it?
Well, 100% that Barcelona deserved to win and 100% Sevilla deserved to lose. And they did everything, especially the last 15 minutes. I mean, you know, even my wife was watching a movie next to me, you know. And she said, why are you so upset? And I'm upset because Sevilla, I think, did everything to lose the game. And they insulted the gods of football the last 15 minutes. Basic rule, when you are the guy who has been fouled on the 16-yard box, you'd never shoot the penalty. I already said that to Craig Burley once during that show, and Ocampos did it and missed it. Then after you have En-Nesyri, the number 15 of Sevilla, he had the ball like 2 minutes before Barcelona equalized, and he didn't keep the ball. He tried something stupid and lost the ball. Then after you have that stupid red card and a stupid free kick. Then after the corner, you have stupid header from Diego Carlos who wants to kick the ball away, and Griezmann gets the ball back and give it to Piqué. Then it's over. And I'm upset because it's not football. You did everything to lose that game, and you lost it. So well done, Barcelona. And my hat off to Sevilla for doing everything to lose that game.
Stupid, Frank. It's very much word of the day.
Can I just say something? That's an old wives' tale. What's this nonsense about the guy who's fouled should never take a penalty?
Frank bangs on about this all the time.
That's an old wives' tale. That's all that.
Why?
Yeah, it doesn't work anymore. Of course, it doesn't work anymore. You're right, Stevie.
There's absolutely nothing to say, or stats, or anything to say that, it's everybody knows, it's proven that the person fouled shouldn't take it. What a lot of nonsense.
Frank, nonsense.
Yeah, it's proven. It doesn't work anymore. It's right, you know. We just have the evidence that you shouldn't do that.
So Ronaldo
and
gets
I said it so many
box.
Times.
So Ronaldo got fouled in the box,
but
and every time he got fouled in the box, he shouldn't have taken a penalty.
Yeah, you're talking about Ronaldo. I'm talking about Ocampos.
So it's selective when it doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but I would say in general, you know, when you are fouled by somebody and you don't shoot the penalty because you're not psychologically ready to do it. And it's been proven many times. God, and you can watch the history of football on penalties to see if I'm right or wrong.
Don't be silly.
Well, it's what I think. I know. That's a Scottish thing to never be okay with the others. That's Miss Craig Burley and Steve Nicholls' kind of way to live their lives.
Frank, you're quite feisty today. Was it because your wife was watching a movie that you weren't in?
No. No. And she doesn't really appreciate soccer. So no, it's just that, you know what? I love football, and I think Barcelona made me think that they did everything to please me because they were playing the way I want them to play, to react and to go back after the dreadful first leg. But when I see Sevilla playing, and I say, wow, it's like they have no experience, like they're completely lost, that they don't know what they do, where you have experienced players, you should know what to do. And I think the fact that Rakitic was on the field helped them to be a little bit better in the second half. But the last 15 minutes, you do everything to be kicked out. And that's completely insane. And you have nobody to react on the field. So guys, you know, just think, keep the ball, stay quiet, stay cool. You know, we're going to sort it out. But one after the other, they do crazy mistakes. That's why I'm just a little bit upset.
What would be more frustrating as well, Jules, from a Sevilla point of view, is that they didn't seem to learn any lessons from the weekend, where, of course, they lost to Barcelona.
Exactly, and we talked about it a bit on Monday show, didn't we? We said it would be exactly the same Barcelona team. So if you're Sevilla and if you're Lopetegui, you adapt your formation even, or certainly the way you're going to play. And what did they do? They just sat back so much from the first minute. That's all they did. Just sat back and tried to defend that 2-0 lead instead of having a goal like we saw a bit more in the second half, which clearly Barca, we know how defensively they make mistakes, and we saw that with the Mingueza penalty on Campos in the second half, and yet they only defended. And like Stevie said earlier as well, you don't close down Dembele, he scores a goal. You keep making those mistakes, it's going to come back to haunt you. And clearly they didn't learn anything from that defeat, where they were completely outplayed at the weekend against Barcelona, a very similar Barcelona side, not just with the starting 11, but also the way they played. And I think it's a huge opportunity missed. And again, showing that Lopetegui, if he's been great for most of the season, certainly in the last two games against Barcelona, showed his limits big time.
You know, the most disappointing thing from Sevilla's point of view is that all they had to do was do the basics and they would win this game, or certainly win the tie overall, being 2-0 up. And sometimes you can accept something incredible happening when you've had a 2 or 3 goal lead and you lose the game. And you say, you know what, the other team were either brilliant or that was an incredible goal. The fact is, everything that went wrong was all down to Sevilla because they just didn't do basic things correctly. So you don't even need to rewatch this game. It's completely in your brain. You know exactly how you lost it. And for Lopetegui, as experienced as he is, that's down to him.
Jules, as you mentioned, we weren't surprised the starting 11, no Griezmann. It was the Dembele up top with Messi, as it was at the weekend. But even with that formation, he had to change things around to try and push the game, which makes you still question as to whether or not he knows really what his best team is.
Well, yeah, certainly that's a good point. And also, I think because Sevilla sat so deep, there was a point where Dembele could not run in behind like he did in the league game, for example, at the weekend, which you take away a lot of his strength. So you had to change something. And to be fair, I thought he was going to change at halftime. I thought he should have changed at halftime instead of waiting a bit more in the second half. But certainly when Griezmann came on and Braithwaite after that, it changed a few things. They had more talent going going forward and offensively to put pressure on that Sevilla defense. And we saw Jules Koundé and Diego Carlos again not having a great game because they were under pressure so much. There were Barca players everywhere, pretty much. And also, the bad news, I guess, is the Piqué injury. We'll have to wait and see what happened really with his knee toward the end of the game. But he looked in a lot of pain even after they celebrated that qualification and the win. So, but overall, as good as the start was and the starting 11 and that formation, and again, we talked about it at the weekend too, this is not, Barca can't play with that formation every single game. It's not going to work for most of La Liga game, for example, or even against PSG in the Champions League next week in the second leg.
Frank?
Yeah, I agree. And I think Koeman made a mistake, you know, after an hour, because it was working well, you know, to play the way they play tactically, three at the back. And suddenly it seems to change, you know, where some players came on and he substituted some others, where he came back to a formation of four almost, where we all know it didn't work. So I didn't know what he was doing. I was wondering, you know, where he wanted to go, where something was working, and he changed it. And we saw, in fact, Sevilla getting a little bit more forward and being better than before. But is it because of Sevilla? I don't think so. It's more because of Barcelona players wondering what they had to do. And that's the thing. And don't forget that at 10 against 11, I didn't see the difference. And we even saw Sevilla pushing forward and being dangerous, where in some of the years, you know, before, 11 against 10, Barcelona will have killed everybody. And it would have been like three or four more goals. And they put themselves in danger being one man more than the other. So still some question mark. They're not very solid, I would say.
Final point on this, Jules. How significant is this for Barca's season that they managed to avoid defeat today and book a place in the final?
It's huge. I think it's huge psychologically. It's huge going forward. We know the elections are taking place on Sunday night. There will be a new president come Monday. Regardless of what happens to Ronald Koeman, if he can win something this season, albeit the Copa del Rey, I think that would almost save him, regardless of where they finish in the league, what happened in the Champions League, because the two long shots. But at least if he can win the Copa del Rey, this is not a blank season. They win something, and then the new president and whoever is managing next season, whether that's Xavi or Koeman again or someone else, at least the rebuild would start with the Copa del Rey and something to almost build on and take this team forward, because I think a blank season would be an absolute disaster for Barcelona. It's not done, and we saw Athletic Bilbao, if it's them qualifying for the final against Barca. We saw in the Super Cup that they beat them in the final. So it would not be already won, but certainly having that chance, that shot of winning something is huge psychologically for Koeman and for the players.
Well, just a reminder why it's a long shot in La Liga. Barcelona currently sitting second. They are 5 points adrift for Athletic with a game in hand. What a game it's going to be on Sunday. It's not Barcelona, but it's Atletico Madrid against Real Madrid.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
In the Premier League today, it finished Crystal Palace 0, Manchester United 0. Stuart Robson joins us. Robert, how would you describe this game?
Well, I'm going to describe it from a Manchester United point of view, and they just weren't good enough going forward. They were too slow in possession. But the players I would be really critical of are the two wide players, Greenwood and Rashford. And I've seen it so many times. Whenever teams have two holding midfield players and have a back four that just sit there, those two players, instead of getting right up against the defenders or trying to make runs in behind, they start coming off into midfield areas, and it leaves Cavani up front by himself. Bruno Fernandes didn't have any space in midfield to play. He was poor. And Matic and Fred, when they were trying to pass forward, there wasn't really too many passes for them. The fullbacks didn't get high enough. Sure, I had a decent game down the left-hand side, but they didn't get enough crosses into the box. They didn't play quickly enough, and they didn't look threatening. And Crystal Palace defended it quite easily.
Robert, can you offer up an excuse for the likes of Bruno Fernandes and Rashford? Well, Rashford's played 41 of the 42 matches this season. Bruno Fernandes, 39 of the 42 games. They're clearly tired.
I would say Bruno Fernandes looked tired today. But Rashford, again, and I'll say it over and over again, whenever he plays poorly, it's usually because of his movement off the ball rather than his actual ability on the ball. They're both exceptional players, Greenwood and Rashford, but they need to have a better understanding of how to receive the ball in dangerous areas when they're playing against teams that want to sit back and have those two holding midfield players in front of them. That's the problem when they play poorly, those two players.
Three coldest draws in a row now, Stevie. What's wrong with them?
Well, I think today's probably a good example of one of the problems. You know, we've said for a long time that it's Rashford and Fernandes, and if they're not on their game, then we're not sure what we're getting. And I think today was a great example. I'm with Robbo. The difference with you having Shaw win the ball on the left and Wan-Bissaka on the right, this isn't Alexander-Arnold and Robertson when Liverpool were at their best. You know, you can't really rely on the service that you're going to get from them. Number one, you don't know when it's coming in. Mm. And that means if you're the centre-forward and you're Cavani, you're struggling to time your runs. So you're either going in too early, having to come back out, and by the time you're on your way out, the ball's coming in. So there's no real cohesion. And it kind of boils down to what I started with. If Rashford and Fernandes are not at it, then they struggle.
The good news, I suppose, for Manchester United, Robbo, is that those teams around them aren't exactly putting together a great run at the moment. They still remain second in the table. Next up, of course, it's City at the weekend, and they've got to face West Ham as well. They should be fine top four, shouldn't they?
I think they should be fine. I think they've got enough about them. They're going to have some good days from now to the end of the season. They're not going to have that many bad days. And I think the teams that you're talking about, Leicester are in third position. I think they're like they did last season. They're just beginning to show signs of getting tired. They're not quite playing with the same fluidity that they were playing with a few weeks ago. West Ham, I don't think, will stay in the top four. And it's up to the likes of Chelsea to try and get into that top four. So I think Manchester United would be all right.
We're taking a look at those upcoming games. As I mentioned, City, then Milan in the Europa League. West Ham then in the Premier League. Then Milan and Leicester City in the FA Cup. It's not an ideal run. Well, I say it's not an ideal run, is it? I don't know.
I actually don't have that much of a problem with it, to be honest, other than the obvious, Manchester City. I think they're favourites against Milan, West Ham, Milan again, and Leicester City. So it's...
How can they be favourites if they can't score goals?
Well, because you know what? If you're not letting any in, it just takes a fluke, a knee, a head, a piece of magic. There's all kinds of things can happen. But if you're not losing any goals, then you're in a good spot.
With all that said, you think they'll be OK top four?
Oh, well, absolutely. No question.
Do you agree with Stevie for that run, Robbo?
Yeah, to a certain degree. It all depends how teams set up against them. We saw Real Sociedad when they played the away game, where Real Sociedad played high up the field, tried to play a high line, and that suits Manchester United. I don't think West Ham will do that. West Ham will just sit back and say, come on, break us down. I saw the cup game where they eventually got the win in extra time, but it wasn't a particularly good game. And I think they'll beat Milan over the two legs. Milan are just starting to falter in Serie A. Mm. So I think that's quite a good run, apart from, as Stevie said, the Man City game, where they could get absolutely thumped if they don't play well enough.
Robbo, you mentioned Leicester, of course, just a 1-1 draw away against Burnley. A poor run for them coming together now, of course, knocked out the Europa League, beaten by Arsenal at the weekend. How much is this down to the injuries?
Well, I think they're missing Maddison because he's the player that can just unlock the door when he's playing those passes over the top for Vardy. He gives them that little bit of creativity on the ball to go past people and get his shots away. Barnes, I don't think played today, but on his day, he's a good player as well. And they play with two up front, Iheanacho and Vardy today. And Iheanacho scored a good goal. But I just think they're beginning to... The size of squad isn't quite good enough to keep them in that top four.
You think so, Stevie?
100%, yeah.
They're not going to finish top four?
Oof. I think they may struggle. for all the reasons that Robbo said. And actually, the more games that are played, the more I think West Ham can hang on.
Really?
Well, they don't have any injuries. They don't give a lot away.
You've got them losing to Manchester United, though.
Well, they're going to lose a game between now and end of the season. They've got, what, 10 games left?
Yeah.
I don't see them winning 10 games. But you said it yourself earlier. Look around you. Mm. Teams like Leicester are not picking up points. You know, Chelsea's on a good run, but they're struggling to score goals. We've just been talking about Man United struggling. So everybody's struggling to score goals. So, listen, it's going to be tight. But as I said, the more games that are played and West Ham continue to stay there, the more I'm kind of believing that it's possible.
Well, the Premier League the Premier League matches, I'm so excited, for Liverpool-Chelsea on Thursday. Liverpool favourites, 6-5, draw 5-2. Chelsea, meanwhile, 9-4. Would you like to see what everyone's predictions are? Stevie is going for a 2-2 draw between Liverpool and Chelsea. Frank McBurth, meanwhile, going for his former side to win 2-1.
Did I not just see Chelsea struggling to score goals?
Yes, you did, Stevie. Yes. Jules, meanwhile, also going for a draw, 1-1.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
More drop points for Milan today. They can only manage a 1-1 draw against Udinese. And their equaliser came with the last kick of the game, a penalty awarded. 3 points adrift of Inter Milan, who are in action on Thursday, with the possibility to stretch that lead then to 6 points. Gab Marcotti joins us alongside Robbo. Gab, how would you sum up this game?
Not good, if you're Milan. Look, they're going to have the alibi of the fact that they're missing their best midfielder in Bennacer, and obviously there's no Zlatan. There was no Çalhanoğlu in this game, although I thought Brahim Diaz did okay, and Çalhanoğlu's no great shakes. But the reality is, if you're missing Ibrahimovic, especially against a team that's going to sit and defend and hit on the break, you have to play fast. And they didn't play with that level of pace, that level of intensity, that level of thinking, where you move the ball around quickly and you create space. And they paid a price for it. They were a little unlucky, I thought, to go down a goal, but still, in the end, those are 2 points dropped.
Robbo, these were the sort of games that they were winning, of course, that put them top of the table. Why aren't they winning them now?
Well, today there was a reason why they didn't win it. And as soon as the team was set up and I saw that Udinese were playing with a five, they had three in central midfield, they had one playing off another central striker, and it was obvious right from the first minute the place they could go and get space was down the outside. The two fullbacks, it wasn't Calabria, it was Kalulu was playing down one side, Teo Hernandez was playing down the other side, and if they'd have switch played quickly, created 2v1s in the wide areas, got cutbacks, crosses whipped in behind Udinese's back three, whatever it, back five, then they'd have created chances early on in the game. But they were too patient, they were too slow, as Gab just said. And then Udinese gained in confidence, they started to defend really well, and then they started to pose a threat on the counter-attack and from set plays. So really, Milan and their coach didn't get the tactics right from the start of the game when they saw how Udinese were set up. It should have gone to the fullbacks, they should have got higher up the field, create 2v1s in the wide areas and get crosses into the box. That was the way they were going to win this game.
And it looked like, Robbo, of course, for a very long time, that they weren't going to pick up anything, picked up a point in the end. What's your man doing jumping like that?
No idea. I think he was claiming that he got pushed in the back.
There was a little nudge. There was definitely a little nudge, wasn't there?
Yes, there was a little nudge. And he's throwing his arms up as if he's been nudged. And, of course, his hand hit the ball and it was a penalty. And if you've seen Kessié take penalties recently, he doesn't miss very many. He's a very good penalty taker. Very casual, but he still puts them in the corner of the net.
Gab, has the narrative changed from talking about Milan as title contenders as now as to whether or not they can even finish in the top four?
No, I think they will finish in the top four, but there are some people now who are going all Chicken Little and assuming that the sky is falling. Look, I think, you know, the elephant in the room is Ibrahimovic, because he hasn't always played well when he's been there, but the narrative is that Milan can't win without Ibrahimovic. I don't think that's true. I think they showed that they can win behind him, but I think people are going to start questioning, well, is he going to stay fit the rest of the season? You know, he's appeared in 14 of their 25 Serie A games this year, and he's injured now again, of course. So there's reason to believe that he's not going to be there. And so people fret about the top four. I think they'll be fine in terms of the top four. But, you know, you look behind them with Roma winning, with Atalanta putting five past their opponents. And Juventus, of course, in the mix as well, still the game in hand. All of a sudden, it's getting a little bit uncomfortable.
Of course, they're still in the Europa League. Next up is Manchester United. United, big favourites, 15-8 on to advance. AC Milan, meanwhile, 11-8. Where do we stand with priorities then for Milan, Gab? Is there a side of them maybe thinking that they should forget about the Europa League to focus on qualifying for the Champions League?
I'm not sure, because look, I mean, those Europa League ties come thick and fast. And, you know, it's not like, oh, I'll rest players and tank against United and then I'm out and I don't have to worry about it. I don't think it quite works that way. I don't think, well, Ibrahimovic will almost certainly be out for the first leg. But, you know, some of those veteran players who are there, especially the ones on expiring contracts, they want to win. They want to win in Europe as well. So I don't think Milan have the luxury of making that decision. Realistically, many of the guys who are missing tonight will also be missing against United. They might get Tomori back, but I think possibly Çalhanoğlu. But I think, you know, that's probably about it. So they're going to have to make it work with this group of players. And I think the club's intent is to go and try to do their best against Manchester United.
Robbo?
Yeah, he's absolutely right. I mean, if you get this far, you want to go and do as well as you can. They're playing against Manchester United. I think they put out their full side. They're trying to win the game. The problem for Milan is I'm not quite sure how they're going to win the game. Without Ibrahimovic up front, they've got a choice of Rebic, who often plays out on the left-hand side and makes runs beyond Ibrahimovic when he's playing, or Leao playing up front, who's quick, but I'm not sure his movement's particularly good. So they're the problems they've got. Who's going to play up front when Ibrahimovic doesn't? And that's where I think they'll have the problem. And if they hold too high a line against Manchester United, we've seen Manchester United run past people as they did against Real Sociedad. And it's not a particularly quick back four for Milan, particularly if Romagnoli plays.
Thank you very much, gents. The latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast drops on Thursday with special guest Sid Lowe. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next. Stevie, of course, with us. Who's doing Extra Time? Jules and Robbo as well, here answering your questions. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. As always, thank you very much for your tweets. Stevie Nicol with me in the studio. Robbo and Jules are back with us as well. Jules, how do you feel about your boy Grizu showing up and proving Koeman wrong? I feel Barca had a great game.
you know, big players, big moments in the game. He gave the assist for the second goal. This is what we're talking about. No, he would have been upset not to start, of course, and we saw it on his face. I think a kickoff, it's not nice. I think he should have come on earlier as well, but I'm glad he gave that assist. And like we said on the show, I don't think they would play in that formation for every game now until the end of the season. I don't think it would work anyway. So I'm sure he will be back in the starting lineup, in a more conventional lineup, if you want, a more normal for what Barca have done this season. Because I still think he has a lot to offer and to bring. And I was just glad to see that he gave the assist to the PK goal and he took part of that win and that qualification.
We're recording things out of order today. So we haven't had the chance properly to speak to Stuart Robson. So let's welcome Stuart Robson to the show and say hello, Robert. How are you and how pleased are you that the Barcelona game... Oh, fix your camera. How pleased are you that the Barcelona game went to extra time?
Oh, absolutely delighted that it went to extra time. You know, I just watched Milan, I just watched Manchester United, just got ready for the show, and then Pete tells me that there's some extra time in the Barcelona-Sevilla game. But I was able to watch it, and what a great game it was as well.
It was inevitable, wasn't it, Steve? We were Saturday. Once he missed the penalty, that was it, done. Yeah. You just knew we were here late.
Yeah, and we weren't wrong.
No, we weren't. Robbo, how shocking do you find it that the pairing of Stones and Diaz has scored more goals than they've conceded? Are they the best centre-back pairing in the world currently?
Ooh, well, Manchester City are the best team in the world, so they haven't conceded goals. Mm-hmm. You could say Laporte, when he's playing, is another top-class player. But Stones has been at his best. Diaz has been excellent for them. So at the moment, you could say they are as good as anybody. There are other teams that have got good centre-halves, but they're as good as anybody at the moment.
Can't think of any pairing that's better than them right now. So absolutely, the answer is yes.
Are they better than the first-choice Liverpool pairing when they're fit?
Ooh, are they better? Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to say possibly, because I think John Stones on that right-hand side is a better football player than Gomez. Dan, you got me here. I don't want to say yes, but because it was so...
Well, you can say yes, it's fine. Nothing bad's going to happen to you.
No, I'm going to say no.
Why?
Because I would have Van Dijk over Diaz on the left, and I'd have Stones over Gomez on the right.
Right.
Well, so I've split the pairings up. So one can't be better than the other.
Ridiculous answer.
So the best pairing.
If you have to have Gomez and Van Dijk.
Well, I'm not giving you. I'm giving you.
That's not the question.
I want to pick two from four. I'll pick.
No, that's not the question.
Van Dijk with Stones beside him.
Well, it's not as if Liverpool TV are going to employ you anymore. If you say anything bad about...
I don't think you can turn around and say that one is absolutely better than the other.
I don't know why you're so defensive about saying.
I'm not being defensive.
You're changing the question. You don't have to say
anything
bad about Liverpool.
Not at all. Absolutely not at all. I want to be correct. And I think I would be wrong if I just turned around and said yes. After what? How many games have they played together?
17. No, I don't know.
Well, you're probably not far wrong, but Van Dijk and Gomez played together for about 40.
Right.
So it would be wrong of me to turn around and say that Stones and Diaz are better.
You'd have Gomez and Van Dijk over those two?
Well, considering we've actually got to that point with the explanation, then yes. Listen, if you've been so good over 40-odd games,
yes,
as opposed to, say, 17 games,
yep,
then clearly you've got to go with the 40 games.
Right. Are you buying this logic, Robbo?
Well, the one thing I would say about John Stones is that he hasn't been consistent over his time at Manchester City. Quite often he was a liability when he was trying to play out from the back. I don't think he's a great defender, but at the moment he's playing the best football of his
Robbo,
career. So that was a yes.
Wow.
See? We got there. We got there.
Look, Robbo says it. So it must be right.
Well, it must be.
So my phone's locked and all the questions are on here. Is Klopp right, Jules, not to release players for international duty if they have to quarantine upon return?
Absolutely.
We heard Solskjaer as well talking about Bruno Fernandes.
I think it's a fair point. Listen, it's already a complicated season enough that if you have to let your players go at the end of March, and especially for a team like Liverpool who will play, you would think, Champions League next round as well, and then some of those players have to come and self-isolate for 10 days where they can't go training, they have to train in their own garden, they can't see anyone, this could mess up completely your end of the season, and I think that's unfair. So at some point someone would have to give, either the clubs or the national teams, but not everyone can be happy because it would be unfair on clubs, and you can argue that clubs also pay the wages of the players who then will go with the national team. So I guess clubs have the priority, and I completely understand if Klopp, Arteta, Solskjaer, Guardiola are saying like, hang on a minute, what if I let you go and play with your country against Albania and Ukraine and you can't back and you can't play for me, you can't even train for 10 days, what kind of state would I get you in 10 days time, let alone the games you're going to miss? This is completely unfair. So I think he's got a really fair point. Yeah,
Klopp's 100% right as well, because he brought up, look, we're the ones who pay their wages.
But forget the money, right? Who in the right mind thinks it's a good idea to have anybody, never mind football players, flying all around the world in the middle of a pandemic? Yeah. And it tells you, well, not that I'm going to tell you something you don't know. It just shows you that, you know what, it's not about the players, it's not about their health, it's about making sure that all the FAs get the little piece of dough, because they couldn't care less about the players, because if they did, they wouldn't be asking them to fly around the world.
Meanwhile, former Hammer, Stuart Robson, what are the chances of West Ham finishing in the top four?
Very slim, I would say. They need to keep Antonio fit. If he can stay fit, they've got half a chance. But there's other teams that are going to overtake them. I think Chelsea will probably overtake them. West Ham, as they often do, will come tumbling down at some point. Yes, they're a good team, particularly a good counter-attacking team. But against teams that sit back, I'm not sure they've got the armoury to break them down. So I think they'll be outside the top four.
They haven't got the hammer. Break it. No. Stevie, in your managerial days, if Celtic had offered you a contract, would you have taken it? It's a big job, but as a Rangers fan, would you have done it? You'd have done it.
I'd like to think so. I would have to have thought about it.
Well, the money, that'd be enough for you, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you're right. I would have taken it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, exactly. What are you pretending for? For Stevie, is there any actual defender that he thinks plays the same way he did?
Do you know, I actually, and you, I know, here we go, Liverpool. I like watching Robertson play.
Right.
Because I like the way he plays. I like to think I played that way. When it came to defending, I defended with everything. And when I got to go forward, I did that with everything as well. So I enjoy watching Robertson.
You were better than him as well.
Oh, thanks very much, Dan.
Well, there you are. You would say that. And I think that's fair enough. In Robbo, I think we can be nice to Stevie for a moment and say that he's better.
Oh, of course we can be nice to Stevie. And Stevie could play in several different positions. So he was a versatile player and played well in all those positions.
I know.
I'm not sure he's as quick as Robertson, but probably a better defender and better passer of the ball, I would say.
Well, Robbo could never tell, because he was always looking at my number on my back.
Oh.
Be halfway done.
Oh, here we go.
You walked into that one, didn't you, Robbo?
All your questions are for Stevie. Stevie, in your last year at Liverpool, have you seen the youths, Gerrard and Carragher? If yes, did you think that they could actually achieve what they did?
I didn't know. They were still kind of in the academy stage.
Right.
They were just coming round to when... They were getting to that stage of the career where the club decide whether they offer them a pro contract or not. So I didn't really see
much
of them.
Was there any buzz about Gerrard at all? Like, was anyone talking about this young kid who was going
to... No, that doesn't happen at Liverpool.
No?
No.
No. Well, Owen must have been, no?
No.
Not at all?
Well, listen, when you're 16 and you're playing in the first team, then clearly there's going to be a buzz about the fans.
Yeah.
But as far as the training ground, as far as the academies... everything's low-key. Everything's low-key. Because things can change in an instant.
Right.
Particularly with a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
So.
Final question. Any particular skills you want to learn right now or wish you had learned back in the day? Cooking, programming, DJing, martial arts? Well, who's to say that Stevie doesn't know all of those and many more? You should see Stevie coding. It's quite something.
Well, I can't cook.
Jules, what skill do you wish that you had?
I guess cooking is a good one, because my mum was not a great cook, so we never really had that in our house, and so I don't have a taste for it. I'm not patient enough anyway right now to do it, but I would have liked to know a bit about it, to be able to prepare stuff and do nice things like that with the children as well.
Robbo is a very good gardener, aren't you, Robbo? That's definitely one of your skills.
I would also like to have been an architect. I'd love looking at buildings and doing extensions, but I'd love to be able to do the architecture myself rather than employing somebody else to do it. That would always be my goal.
Oh, nice. What about you, Stevie?
Do you know what I wish I could? I wish I was a good handyman.
Yes.
Because it doesn't matter what it is, I can't do it.
No.
And my missus, she'll be in the middle of cooking, and I'll be like, Eleanor, can you come and fix this?
But then when Ellen can't do it, you have a handyman who comes round.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell the plate story? Because I do enjoy this story to end extra time.
Oh, sure.
Go on, Stevie, oh, you have to go. Now.
Well, so... My missus said to me, we needed something doing, right?
Right.
And clearly, obviously, I couldn't do it. And because Eleanor couldn't do it, we had to get somebody in to
do it. Yes, yep.
And I said to her, I said, you know what? I said, we'll get them to have a look at that cupboard. I said, because the nuts and stuff, you know, where you open it up, I said, they must have dropped. You know, that's my terminology,
yes,
my knowledge of the hinges. You know, I said, the hinges definitely have dropped. She went, all right. So I called the guy up. I said, hey, can you come and do that? I said, by the way, while you're at it, do us a favour.
Yeah.
Have a look at the door on that cupboard. I said, I think it's dropped, you know. Anyway, he finished his jobs and he said to me, he said, see that cupboard? I went, yeah. He said, it wasn't the hinges. I went, oh, what was it? He went, the plates were in the way. All you had to do was move. If you move the plates a little bit further back, the door would have closed.
So the plates were too big?
The plates... No, we just needed to shove them back.
That was it.
Brilliant, Steve.
There was something stuck at the back.
Right, yeah.
That was making them not go any further back. I thought it was
the hinges had dropped. Lovely. Thank you very much, Stevie. Thank you to Robbo and to Jules as well. We will be back tomorrow for more. Stevie, you're back in the studio.
Oh, it's loving it. Absolutely loving it.
Beautiful. We can't wait.